Thank you, Chair West. Without objection, I'm going to take finance budget and audit items 1 and 2 as the consent agenda. Any questions or comments? If not, I entertain a motion that be approved.
Motion.
Second. Motion made and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, let's get into the meat and potatoes here. Item 3, approval of 2026-27 operating budget. Susan Allen, please.
Okay, well, good morning, everyone, and thank you for allowing me to present the 27 budget for your consideration. So I think you'll see on the cover, it's our brand new field house, and it does a great shot. And here we go. So I've asked that we keep this informal and ask questions as we move through it. I think it's one of the most important items that a board will take action on during its time. So. Cover some budget highlights and then move on to really important that the board completely understand all that they're approving as part of the budget. And then we'll also cover some information items that are not action items for you, but rather I think it's important to know as part of the overall finance of the university. Some revenue highlights, expense highlights, and then some next steps. So budget highlights. Here we go. So in the year that we're currently in, or the fiscal year 26 budget, our budget was just over $404 million. The budget that we present to you today is just over $405 million. So that's a nice increase of $1 million. So as I say to people, and I remember back in the day of just being a young budget person, we sometimes get very tied into our numbers, and we want to just talk about our numbers. But every budget needs to tell a story, because there's reasons that decisions are made from leadership and passed through as we make budget decisions. So the first one I think that's really important is that we always use the strategic plan of the university to guide all of our budget decisions. And I think the board knows, because many of these sit on our committees, is that we're right in the middle of updating our strategic plan. The committees, and I should say that the committee itself, the steering committee, is being chaired by Dean Murphy and by Bryson Davis in financial aid. And we have passed our recommendations on to President Caboni, and he will take the summer to review those and formulate any changes and present it to the campus at their faculty staff convocation in August. Our second guiding principle, which is very important to our students, is that we preserve affordability and student success. So always have that top of mind for us. Third would be, here we go, which is really important to me, so I get a big smile on my face, to maintain a structurally balanced operating budget. As the board probably knows, we just did that, and we don't want to go back to where we were when President Caboni first got here. We've got that done, and we're on a path of sustainable financially going forward. The fourth guiding principle would be to avoid across-the-board budget reductions to the extent possible. And finally, always prioritizing student success. So any questions on those? Okay. So talking about student success, I think graphically you will see that these graphs can really tell a story. So if you go back to when Dr. Caboni first came to campus in 2017, we were at a first-year retention rate of hovering around 70%. And today, we're at approaching 80%. So I've got to say, this is incredible work for the entire campus, because this doesn't happen just within pockets of the university. It's across the campus. And this is just almost an unheard of trajectory over this short a time period. So congratulations to our campus, and something that I think everyone should be proud of. So life is the six-year baccalaureate graduation rate. So again, Dr. Caboni came to campus the graduation rate was just over 50%. Today, it's right at 59%, approaching 60%. Again, just a great news story for our campus. And finally, one that I take great pride in, that this shows you undergraduate degrees and credentials and ranked by institutions within the state. So there UOK is the leader, and then right below that would be us, WKU, and ahead of the other red institution just north of us. And I will say, I know that Regent Dennison asked me and others, do we have our 26 numbers? And we don't. We are still conferring degrees in the summer, so that will be final in the fall. And but we expect to do even better. So looking at our budget assumption. So on the revenue side. So go back to the structurally balanced budget. You always want to make sure that your revenue projection is driving your expenditure decisions. You don't want to do vice versa, or that will get you back to a structurally imbalanced budget very quickly. So we take this to heart, and we start on our enrollment projection in the fall. And we started developing that in 2025 in conjunction with academic affairs, enrollment management, the finance team under Ronaldo, institutional research, and the deans. And I'm going to turn it over. I think enrollment is extremely, extremely important to our budget. I'm going to turn it over to John Mark Francis, who leads our enrollment on campus, and let him speak to our efforts and some updates and so on and so forth. So.
Sure. Good morning. As we enter the final 2.5 months of our yield season, we're in a good position of doing so from strength. If we look at our admit pool for incoming freshmen, that's setting up more than 20%. And so we have that population of students from which we can yield. And Susan mentioned the collaborative nature of this process. The academic deans have been involved every month. We sit at the table in the president's office and talk through the development of yield strategies. Our preliminary projections for the fall semester show continued improvement on overall net tuition revenue. We talk about that quite often, but looking at the freshman class revenue, likely coming in somewhere between $900,000 and $1.2 million up year over year, and continuing to drive down that discount rate. We've talked about that, I've talked with you all about that frequently, and you've heard us talk about how nationally there's that pressure with discount rates hitting all-time record highs, I think about 58% now. And we will come in using institutional funds, that's not counting opportunity funds and other private sources, but institutional funds under 30%. So continued movement there, healthy pipelines, a lot of work with our colleagues across campus as we decentralize this idea that recruitment is the function of one office or one team, and really getting the entire campus involved in the process. So we will continue that work and have those one-on-one conversations and talk to those families about the value and benefits of the WKU experience.
So, gentlemen, before you sit down, could you speak a little bit about what you shared about time to degree and how that's changed?
Yes, absolutely. So, doing the right thing by our students has some effects on the institution as well as we do long-term planning. So, you take graduating the largest number of students ever in the spring semester, those students aren't coming back to pay tuition in the fall semester. If you look at our average time to degree dropping from 4.4 years down to 4.02 in this most recent year, that's absolutely tremendous, and it's the right thing to do, and it's absolutely the direction the institution should go. But it has revenue implications. And so as we sit around the table and make decisions about the kind of students we want to recruit, we want those high-quality students. But it takes some additional planning on the financial aid side to make sure that we're able to cover the cost and do business at the university as we get these students through the graduation.
It also has a true cost for the students as well.
That's the benefit, yes. Yeah. Our students are leaving here with less debt. They're getting into jobs and earning income and getting that boost that comes with having a college degree earlier, and will pay out for them many times over the course of their life.
So, I didn't think I hit anything, but anyway, so to cover the other items, so the second bullet under enrollment would be, after enrollment, would be state appropriations. So that's our second largest source of revenue. As you all remember, we talked about it throughout the session starting in January. The governor's budget that was released was flat to higher education, then both the House and the Senate released versions that reduced higher education. So thank goodness for all the work of our president, Jennifer Smith. It couldn't have been any later that at the last day, at the very last minute, they restored the budget cuts to higher education. So we're very thankful for that. We would always, we could always like to have new money, but thankfully, no cut to higher education. And then our auxiliary and our other self-supporting revenues, they're projected separately, primarily by their respective deans, vice presidents, and their budget managers. So moving on to the expenditure side, the first one, the assumption under that is very important. We do at the university, like I think most people do in their own personal budgets, you must fund fixed cost increases and contractual increases first before you go to anything else, because if you don't, you're being foolish because those increases are there. So I want to move to the second important bullet. So we look to our budget executive committee to help guide our budget decisions. One of their recommendations is always a salary recommendation. So in accordance with their recommendation to executive leadership, we accepted it. And it at this point, with this budget that you take action on today, does not include a salary or compensation pool for our faculty and staff. But a caveat to that, which is a very important caveat, so I want everyone to understand this, is that we always do, and we will continue to reconvene the leadership, deans, vice presidents, myself, Bud, Ronaldo and his group will reconvene in probably late September, early October, when our fall enrollments become final, to evaluate to see if our revenue and our enrollment would support a salary pool. If it does, we would put that into effect in the January time frame like we always have. So I just want everyone to understand, while it's not included in this document, in this budget, we will reconvene in the fall to make that decision. And the final bullet was, at this point, juncture, there are no unit-based budget reductions. Okay. A little on budget governance. So this is the graphic that I typically share with the board. I think it's important that everyone understands that the BEC, Budget Executive Committee, sits in the center there with all the various constituency groups having input into that committee. So the Faculty Senate, the Staff Senate, the Student Government, our academic college leadership, and our VPs make recommendations into the BEC. They spend a lot of time. They meet biweekly throughout the entire academic year, and they formulate recommendations up to the executive leadership. The first one being the most important that we just talked about, the salary increase. So our RAMP budget report. So this is a lot of numbers and a lot of detail, which I won't go all through, but I did want to note that this is simply basically half of the report, and it focuses on the applicants. They are the center of our budget. They receive all the revenue, and as they should be. We're an institution, we're an academy where the focus should be on our academic units. So I just wanted to briefly go over how the revenues and expenses are allocated in this model. So first, tuition and fees are allocated amongst our colleges 75% to the college of instruction, or where the actual credit hours are produced, and 25% to the college of enrollment, so where the student is actually enrolled. Scholarships and fellowships, our financial aid is allocated out by undergraduate tuition revenue. Grants and contracts, while there's a one-year lag, they're allocated out based on where they are earned. State appropriation, the allocation for that is 80% on credit hour production, 15% on research and 5% on performance, which is primarily degrees. Your direct expenses are allocated out based on where they occur. So your wages and salaries by college, your fringe benefits by college, and your operating expenses. Your indirect expenses are those allocation pools that come over from the support units. So I always like to take one example. It's the easiest for me to get my head around. So facilities, for example. The units get charged back based on the square footage that they actually maintain or they use. So looking at your revenues, subtracting, this is a lot like an income statement, right, sure, Ronnie? So looking at your revenues and taking out your direct expenses and your indirect expenses leaves you with a margin. And then from that, you take away your participation fee. And the participation fee, as a reminder, is 13% of tuition and state appropriation. And that will then take you to, there you go, basically the margin with a profit or loss by college. So you'll see that one of our colleges, the College of Health and Human Services, is actually in the black. And then to differing degrees, our colleges are in the red a bit. So it's at this point, I think it's important to turn this over to the provost to talk about what he's done with his colleges on subvention and what he did and how he made those decisions. And so, Bud, I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah, can we go back to the slide, please?
Okay.
As you see, what you would see is that the amount of money we have is $32 billion to allocate. I get a proportion of that money to allocate to see whether or not to do two things. One is to get the colleges out of debt, which is, you can see three or four of the five are in debt. And the second part is to then use an incentive to be able to move them forward to try to reach the goals that they have told me. So before any of this happens, what I usually do is send them out a set of questions that ask about metrics. What are your goals for next year? What are you trying to accomplish? Did you accomplish last year's goals? Those types of things. The second part of that is a list of about 20 metrics that they have to give me numbers for. That's a three-year running average that shows me whether they're moving in a direction or not. What I will say is that I started here and I looked at this $9 million in the hole, and I will tell you the first time that we ever did a ramp model, that was at almost $15 million. So what we've seen is about a $6 million decline in that over time, which tells me one thing is that they have become much more efficient as time has gone on and have engulfed or taken care of the ramp model and understand the ramp model and are using it to be able to move forward. So because I saw that and that was still happening, I felt like since we've been able to find $7 million, I need to get them out of debt. Nobody should sit in debt at that point. So I get everybody out of debt. That leaves me about $1.2 million. At that point, what I do is to decide how I distribute that. And how I've decided to distribute that goes by how much you have moved in the metrics we see and what the answers are of what the goals are for the future. And you, as you can see, at this point, Gordon Ford got the most and Steve's got the second most. Two colleges that have made incredible changes, have looked to the future on how to move enrollment forward, have looked to the future about how to change education, have changed curriculum to get students to be here and to make them modern. All the things we've been asking for, so they get the most. Others are still moving in that direction. Everybody did get some money because I think everybody should get a little bit of money to ultimately allow them to kickstart some new initiative that could help them move in a direction. And that's how I make those decisions to ultimately take care of the dollars.
One thing I would add, Bud, is
yes,
I think it's so the College of Health and Human Services, they actually keep that 200.
Yeah, I mean, it says 50,000, but it's really 50 times 281,000 because they get to keep the money too. So if I was really fixing it, I would fix it so that it said $350,000.
So this is what, our fourth grant budget, I think, or so. So we've looked at these over time, and in each one of them, we're making decisions in that year. But the only thing I can do, as we all try to learn and understand this, is try to understand trends here. In one trend, I already emailed Susan about this, is the indirect expenses. And the indirect expenses going up $5 million last, approximately $5 million last year. And there's some accounting things that was some of that and moving things around. But, you know, we've had 4 years of that, and we see that each year. But then we're making decisions with the budget in that time. Without that $5 million in additional indirect expenses, Potter would be net zero, and Siebes would be net zero, and College of Business would have been profitable. It's like, do they, this additional $5 million in expenses that got thrown on them, and then we go all the way down to the bottom and we start talking about their margin. Will we have more adjustments to the indirect expenses next year than we're because it seems hard that we're making those decisions in real time, but over time there's still accounting adjustments and things that's happening deep within the model that may not be fair to the decision makers in those colleges, if that makes any sense. Because it's additional $5 million they didn't have to cover for last year.
So, just so everyone understands, there was a big change 1 year, and that was because of the $24 million structurally balancing credit that we had in the budget. When we took that out, which was good, that actually increased the support budgets, the support expenses. So that means the academic units got charged back up. A larger indirect. But as many of the deans said when we explained this, is that basically the colleges were being over-subvented at that point. So to this year, to the $5 million, as I explained to you, Shane, the good news is we're not allocating all of the financial aid out to the academic units as we did last year. We're holding some of that within financial aid to make sure that our strategies are in line. But when you hold that in financial aid, that increases that financial aid to the budget, so the chargeback. Okay. Now, the other thing we did, there was some debt service for DSU that, for whatever reason, when the model was first built, it sat in an auxiliary unit. We made the correction and moved that debt service out to where the other debt service resides. So, yes, that did increase the chargeback, but it also reduced the auxiliary budget, which means there was less subvention for that auxiliary, which gave the academic units more subvention. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. And Shane?
Kind of.
Well, I think it's money move, and it's always going to happen, right? We're sitting at the edge, right, of balanced. What you really hope is that the change comes and you're not at balance and you start to grow on the other side. And as you grow on the other side, more and more dollars become available for subvention and for one-time money. I mean, but what I want to make, and the point I really want to make, is that money that they get is an incentive. And you can see that there's a difference in what each group gets. And that's related to what that college has done last year and really over the three-year period as I look. I mean, some of the numbers I remember, because I get booklets from these guys now, like, you know, so that we can have discussions. And if I think of Gordon Ford, I think it was a 42% increase in graduate enrollment since 23-24, something like that, if I remember right. Not perfect, but, and those are the kinds of things I see as I walk along and I look at, and I'm trying to give the maximum amount of money that I can out to be able to move them forward even greater. And that, in the old budget, you would have never got that, right? I mean, they wouldn't have seen that in a large number of cases. In this budget, I have tried, and I think we all have tried, as we've looked at the numbers, to give them the best we can.
And I always go back to creating a new budget model is not the sexiest thing you can do when you come to the institution. But it was crucial for what we built. And what's exciting for me, because you can think about what the effects are, but to see it occurring, and it's not the budget effect. It's actually the collaborative effect and the pressure that deans feel. So one of the impetuses for the conversation that Potter College is having are these numbers and trying to get to good. There is pressure on Dean Brown from his dean colleagues to make that $7 million number where it says margin lower. Why? Because it's more money for everyone. And it also rewards growth in enrollment. And it's, for me, it's fun to watch leaders at the academic level create the change within their units that are going to move these numbers, but move them for the right reasons, because they're increasing retention, they're increasing enrollment, they're increasing degree production, they're growing research. And so I'll go all the way back to what I first said when I talked about why do a decentralized budget model. The reason is because it incentivizes deans to both be innovative and focus on the number that matters, which is the enrollment number. I'll remind you of the dean who said to me, enrollment management is not my problem, it's their problem. And that our budget practice was every dean got a number out of thin air on a sticky note that said, do not go over this amount. And now we're here.
I just wonder, could we get a fiscal year 26 ramp budget report at some point too? I'd just like to compare and see where we are as opposed to last year or even the year before that. Every year we should be getting better, right? Every year. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. I mean, the one number that went up, I could tell you, would be the number associated with Gordon Ogden. And the reason it went up has to do with the fact that we changed the numbers we were using when we did that. Their amount of space went up, which is not good, but Ogden needs space. I mean, they have lots of labs, they have lots of areas, they have lots of centers, they have lots of those kinds of things that every science area has. And if you look, their space amount that they pay over is about $2.5 million more than everybody else. So it's a huge expense for Dave that Dave has to try to deal with in this regard. The other thing was is we were using the numbers from 17, right? And we decided as a group to move that to the numbers of 23. So to be 2 years behind instead of 5 years behind, which is where we started. And in doing so, Ogden took a hit of that too.
And one of I think this is, Melissa, to your point, I think this would be good for us to do at the retreat. We could let's put multiple years next to each other so we can show the, just like we've done with enrollment and retention and graduation, we can do it with budget model.
We'll do that.
And I also will add that this model was very difficult to work with the $24 million carry forward problem embedded into the budget. So I think from a pure financial perspective, this is incredible work that our colleges have done, given that we, in the middle of all this, we had to readjust our budget by $24 million.
So. As someone that's tried to grapple with these numbers now for over a decade and never really understood all of it, I'm not sure it's my job to try to understand. My job is to be sure you all do, but I remember seeing CF. You know, and what does that mean? Carry forward. Never understood that really.
Neither did we.
Yeah.
It seems to me to answer the question about transparency. It seems to me this is a lot more transparent than it used to be. Now it always needs to improve. And it's always going to change and fluctuate year to year, month to month, whatever. But it also seems to me that having deans intimately involved has been a really good thing. And that's really what I have to say.
I think it's an improvement
over what I used to say.
I think you hit it on the head. I think deans being intimately involved is very important. And the conversations that go on between myself and the deans when we're talking about budget our in-depth conversations in a large number of cases and our conversations about how do we move the whole forward. This model works much better if you're not just looking at your own college, but you're looking at all of the colleges and how do we help everybody become efficient or do things differently or move forward, and how can I help you do that? If you do that, the model works great. And that's what they've been great at doing that.
It's up to each dean then to ferret that down even further to the department chairs or whatever. I'm sure each one does it differently.
And it's up to them to find synergy between each other and to find ways to work together and ways to help each other move forward. And that's one of the things that I think has allowed us to make curricular changes and some of the other changes that we've seen that have helped us become get here.
And while I'm talking, I do want to point out to Terrence in particular, I was heartened to see some really positive comments on the faculty survey in terms of how he's handled things. Or not that other deans haven't too, but you gave your report. I was thinking, gee, guy's really trying to do a good job.
I'll say that the one thing that I know that I'm good at is knowing what I'm not good at. And, and what I mean by that is that I can't thank me and I have a good team. And even if they support or not, it's good to have that level of conversation because it makes you better. And we just want to make sure that we are doing our active part to contribute positively to this number and to ensure that this institution continues to live on. I'll say one thing, I'm sorry, but the perception of this institution externally is really good. Whenever I travel around and I hear people talk about Western Kentucky University, I get nothing but I love that place, why I was connected to that place. I think sometimes we forget because we're embedded in it so much, but we just want to make sure that we're able to send those people out to continue to celebrate the joys and good things that we're doing in this institution every year.
Keeping students first and foremost, and then being fair to faculty and staff is really a difficult balancing act. And I'm sure there's a lot of frustration every day and people that are trying to do that well.
So as someone who, following Regent Bell's point, someone who got to the old budgets.
Jane, you need to speak up.
I'm struggling with the microphone over there. You're hearing that feedback. Someone who got to do the old budgets and the new budgets, you know, when we transitioned to RAMP, we had multiple goals, and structurally balanced budget was one of them, and we're there, and that is a major accomplishment. I just, you know, I have to speak to, and the provost and I've already had these conversations, the tension that comes in the model, because it's, there's a slow movement towards recognizing those areas that are growing and getting the revenues there. And when it was sold on campus, I went through that transition. It went to the colleges, and they said, hey, if you grow, we're going to get resources to you. It's a lot slower in practice than it was in promise. And so that's creating a tension in those areas that are doing well. And just to that's something to improve on, something to recognize, but it's still much better than where we were. There's no doubt about that.
Well, I mean, that's back to that structural, right, saying it, budget. I mean, as we grow and we do those kinds of things, the money will get better, right, as we look. But I think in every case, we've been able to show that we've given extra dollars, and in giving extra dollars allowed things to move forward. And to me, that's an incentive that would have never been in if we were under the old budget. And, you know, jobs have, or positions have, moved from one areas to other areas at this point because there's been needs in areas that grow, like Gordon Ford, where you grow 42%, right? And you may not have any money left to hire somebody, but it's in my court then to figure out how to hire somebody. We've been able to do those kinds of things too. So, not as fast as I'd like either, Shane. I'd be the first person to say that, but I at least look, and I look back to where we were, and we were, the 13% wasn't enough to cover what we were in debt when we started, and this whole world has changed for us. And I would say I'm proud of everybody on campus that this is where we are, and Susan and her team have done an incredible job to get us there and to understand the model.
Yeah, so...
you want me to stop?
Did you have more? No, you're not.
Oh, no, we've got more.
Please, carry on.
So, as I told you to begin with, I think it's important for the board to understand what they're approving is when they take action on the budget. Not only are you approving the overall budget, but you would be approving a tuition, a flat rate for our undergraduate resident tuition, and that would be an increase of 204, and that equates to a 1.69% increase. So, to remind you, we had a two-year cap that we were given from the CPE, and we could not exceed, I know Brian will keep me honest, $630.
That's correct.
Yes. And we did 420 last year. So this year we could have gone up 210. We're going up of 204. Some other information items. So housing rates, while they differ amongst some of our communities, overall, the rate would be approximately around a 5% increase. Our meal plans are scheduled to go up 2%, and that's a contractual increase with Aramark. Big Red Backpack is increasing from $24 a credit hour to $26 a credit hour, and that's been a huge success for our students. Some revenue highlights. So we are as we talked about, a tuition-dependent university, which is not different than most today, but it goes back to what John Mark talked about. Enrollment and net tuition revenue is extremely important. It makes up 47% of our budget. Our second largest source would be state appropriation. I like to say that if we were sitting around the table 20 years ago and we were talking about this, that would have been completely flip-flop, with state putting in much more than what they put in today. So
as a percentage of budget.
Yes, as a percentage. Sorry. So tuition and fee revenue. So again, the revenue budget is built on that tuition rate increase I talked about, 1.69. Net tuition revenue across all of the populations is scheduled to go up 4.6 million or 3.4 million. And as John Mark talked about, we built the budget on a freshman class, which would generate about $1.1 million in net tuition revenue. So our revenue highlight and drivers, just some on this, our state appropriation is declining by about just as a reminder, our base appropriation is flat. Gatton Academy is receiving a nice increase of $500,000 performance funding, which is just continues to be a problem for just about everybody in this state except for the University of Kentucky. Unfortunately, with our metrics still performing well and all of those stories we talked about, we are losing some money in the performance funding model.
Susan, could I address that? I think it's important for the board to know. The legislature just appointed the Performance Funding Review Committee, where we're going to take a look at the model, how it has worked and how it needs to be revised. The best example that I can use to demonstrate how it has failed us is the multiplier that's used for the student service universities in the state, Louisville and Kentucky. You saw we produced the second most credentials and degrees in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. And if the dollars were allocated based upon actual performance, we would have gotten money from that performance metric. But then the model takes 1.5 and multiplies the number of degree students granted. And so all of a sudden, Kentucky goes from whatever their number was to 1.5 times that. Louisville does the same thing. Louisville leapfrogs us, and all of a sudden we're taking a reduction on that metric because we didn't meet the performance of the two research universities. It's not sustainable over time, and we must address that as a group of both presidents and legislators. That work begins this summer, happen over a year. Those will be difficult conversations, and particularly because the University of Kentucky likes the model, obviously, as it exists today. But we're going to work towards something that's more equitable.
So grants and contracts will decline about $4.3 million. Nothing we can control. This is all at the federal level. Unfortunately, there is a decline expected for our federal student financial aid, which is unfortunate for our most needy students, and also reducing of the number of extramurally funded research for our faculty. So things are out of our control. So other revenue is an increase of about $4.6 million. Most of that increase is directly related to additional foundation revenue being transferred into WKU, and that is directly associated with new athletic private donations. Finally, our auxiliary decline of $1.5 million, and again, all of that is directly associated with really efficiencies within our P3 and a lot of the revenue associated with housing not running through the university anymore, but running outside through the developer and the Inwood who maintains the facility. So expenses. Like tuition heavy on the revenue side, we're personnel heavy on the expense side, no different than any other institution. We've seen this type of comparison across the board. So, but that's our largest category within expense, making up about 45% of our budget, student financial aid, but that does include federal and state aid, about $119 million, or 29% of our budget. Expense drivers, so personnel, again, the changes that I talked about with the P3, rather than those salaries running through our books, they'll run through Inwood's books, and so it gets, you see that decline for personnel. And also, health insurance is going up, and the budget includes a contingency for the premium increase. Student financial aid, a decline, again, associated with those, a reduction in the financial assistance for the institution that John Mark talked about, and then the anticipated declines in the federal and state aid. The supplies and operating expense increasing about $10.3 million. That's a large increase, I understand, but almost $5 million of that is that fundraising money now being transferred from the foundation over to the university directly associated with athletic fundraising. That's about half of it. The other half is directly associated with two leases that sit outside the P3, and that's the lease with Center Hall and the lease with Campus Flats. That's not within our P3. And finally, maintenance and utilities, a decline of about $3.2 million. Again, I guess you see the theme here. That's the P3 driving this. The utilities will be billed directly to our P3 partners rather than running through the university and us billing back as we did with the Student Life Foundation. Next steps. So today, you will take action on the budget, and we hope that you approve it, and then it would move to the CPE, the tuition rates. They have statutory authority for approving tuition in the state of Kentucky, so they would take action on the tuition rates at that point, and we would load all of this data, which is lots of data, in from our Axiom budget software into our general ledger. And finally, Rush, and then you can ask me some questions. We will continue monitoring our enrollment and our financial aid. We will continue doing our monthly monitoring as we started several years ago of our finances, both revenue and expenditure, on a monthly basis with all the deans and vice presidents. And then that critical date in September, October timeframe, where we will reevaluate our tuition revenue, our enrollments, and make a consideration for our compensation pool. So now I'm ready for questions, Rush.
So the so if my math is correct, and it definitely might not be, we're $6 short of what we could increase it. So why not the full 630?
I knew somebody was going to ask. So, unfortunately, our systems are made in such a way, and I'll turn to Ronaldo, who will probably speak to this much more brilliantly than I can. Yeah, the same thing happens at Louisville. The same thing happens at every institution in the state. So we want to make sure our per-credit tuition rate comes to either, let's say an example, 220 per credit hour or 220.50 per credit hour. Nowhere in between drives the systems crazy. So that's the reason. You have to come to a number that will make that divisible. So, all right, Ronaldo?
Yeah, that covers it.
Okay. I did it.
I should say it was
just so. Yeah, right. I think I understand. I mean, CPE has like a limit on how much an institution can do that. I know that John Mark, ours is less than like other institutions in Kentucky. I don't love that like that is the thing that's like making us okay with it. As I understand it, it's kind of been explained as a necessary evil when it comes to like higher education. I do think though, like as a student representative, like if we're going to, if one of our guidelines will be to preserve affordability and student access, we have to do whatever we can to not raise that tuition. Like, if we're considering the meal plans are rising and housing and Big Red Backpack, I mean, I understand those things are I think we should, it shouldn't just be like, oh, we can increase it, you know, however much over 2 years, so we're going to increase it that much over 2 years. I don't know. I think we should try it. I mean, and I'm not saying you guys don't. I'm sure you guys look for everything to not increase it, but.
It's a good point, and we continue to focus on maintaining affordability. Don't look at, and please do not look at only the sticker price, but the net tuition price, right? So net after aid, after discount, all of that. It's important to think about what the actual effect of raising tuition is. But this is what keeps me up at 4 o'clock in the morning, Terrence. If you look at how CPE has constrained our ability to raise tuition, and they've done a good job at that over the past decade, we've raised tuition less than 2% annually on students. Is it every year?
It is.
But it's the environment in which we live that's driving some portion of that. And by that, I mean, you think about what the inflationary pressures are on families, the same inflationary pressures exist for universities. We are running now at probably the higher education price index, HEPI. We're running at 4 or 5% annual. What does that mean for our budget? It means that our expenses go up 4 or 5%. And then you think about what are the other revenue opportunities. Can you hear me, Carter? Okay, I just want to make sure.
Okay.
The other drivers are state appropriation. And if you think about what happened this session, I hate saying I'm thankful for no cut. I'm grateful that we didn't have a 7 or 8% reduction to the state appropriation, because the conversation we would be having today would be a very different conversation. That's a reduction in, $7 million? I don't know how we absorbed that. And that was the conversation that we had with legislators, and they heard us. And for that, I am thankful. But we have to get to a place as a commonwealth where legislators and leaders understand that to continue the economic growth that we have, we have to invest in one of the drivers of that economic growth, which is higher education. We're going to continue to push on every revenue stream. But the reality is, inflation is biting any margin we have because of the increase in expenditures, and it's similar to what individual households feel when an increase doesn't cover the cost increase in just living. Then you're losing ground, and so I think that's kind of where we are as an institution as well, and we have to turn the corner on that, both with CPE in terms of if we're not going to have investment. We have to generate revenue. I do not want to do it on the backs of students and families. So, dear legislature, we don't want to do this on the backs of students and families. Please see what we do. And we have got to move to a different place as a commonwealth. And it's hard, right? This is hard work, because it's not just numbers, right? This is about people and lives and our mission as an institution. But it's tight. tight, tight, tight. But still proud of the work we've done.
So having a conversation with my roommate last night. He pays his tuition out of pocket and like just works. And I mean, this is like, it's, I'm thinking, oh, $200, like it could be worse. Could be, you know, $600, $700. But like, this is like a couple weeks of work. Mm-hmm. Like straight up, like for somebody that isn't able to take out loans, I don't know. I mean, Dr. Bale, if we're going to, you know, say that students are like the most important thing, we have to like consider students that are, you know, this is like their life, like, you know, it is tight. That's a great one.
And this is why we all need to do a better job of educating the public on why degree does matter. I mean, there are a lot of people out there today who don't think a college degree is worth it. And yet we know, and there's data and evidence to back it up, that having that degree is going to not only enrich your life in other ways than just monetary, but it makes a big difference over a lifetime of earning. And that's something that everybody on this board, every faculty member, every staff person needs to educate everybody they interact with every chance they can.
A couple of years ago when I voted against the budget with some others, part of my rationale for that was I felt like we need to send a message to the state, to our legislators, that these cuts are not sustainable, that we have budget cut. Roddy came on the board, I told him, there's not a lot of fat here. There's not a lot of expenses to cut anymore, yet we're still trying to do that. Already incredibly lean. I tell people about offices across campus. I've used the descriptor before. We pushed them to the point of bend but don't break, and we're praying in some of those places that they don't break because of the repeated chasing for efficiencies year after year, new efficiencies on top of what we've already done. So that messaging is incredibly important because we're existing on very old numbers in terms of what they admit. They're just, the legislature wants to push the cost of that to the students, and we're caught in the middle of trying to find a way to make that affordable for the students while still delivering what we're trying to do. I talked with John Mark about this, and I still believe part of our, you know, Dr. Bell talks about our messaging. We, our marketing, our community messaging, I understand marketing directly to students, hey, come to WKU, and hitting those at the same time. We don't have a great message going out to the community at all. And the marketing field is so fragmented now on how to do that. But the constituents who are informing these legislators, they're not hearing much about what we're really doing and the successes that we have because they're not part of our target demographic on that. And that's, how do we get there? I have no idea. But it's not just the legislatures. The people who are voting for them are not seeing the value of us. And they're hearing something else. They're hearing about how evil faculty are, and they're hearing about all the terrible things that we're doing, and they're not seeing the students in my classroom. One of my favorite things as a regent was a student who was sitting on the first row of graduation and mouthed to me as I'm sitting up there and said, I got the job because I've been working with them on negotiations and things. And so they don't hear those stories. They hear all the negative things, and I'm not sure how to counter that, but the real impact of it is tuition goes up. And, or, faculty don't get raises, staff don't get raises, or we can't hire people, and we can't deliver the programs to the students that we need to do to be able to deliver to make a difference in the Commonwealth. Sorry for the rant.
Susan, I would be remiss if I didn't thank you and everyone in your department and all in the university community that were involved in this process. Thank you. Certainly. Much appreciated.
You're here. I want to thank Ronaldo. He's our AVP for Budget and Finance. And Brian Denning, who is our Executive Director of Budget. That's an office, well, actually, the Budget Office of One, and with Ronaldo, too. And so they've done a lot of work. And thanks for the collaboration with the deans and vice presidents and provost and the president, of course. So thank you.
Are there any other questions or comments before we go to vote? If not, I would entertain a motion to approve the fiscal year 2026-27 operating budget. Motion by Regent Dennison.
I second.
Second by Regent Nichols. Thank you. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed by like sign?
Nay.
Okay. Motion passes, and we are going to take a short break before we get on to the next item on the final committee. Okay.
No, it's all right.